Welcome to That Farm Life, planting hope, harvesting strength. That Farm Life is a production of Eagle Farms at Williams Baptist University. On That Farm Life, we talk about that life that is that of a farmer and their family. We talk about the day-to-day grind, the good times, the tough times, and everything in between. Because farming is more than a job, it's a way of life. And we're here to offer opportunities to help you deal with the stress and strains of farm life through faith, family, and community with other farmers. Now here's your host, Stan Norman.
Hello, and welcome to That Farm Life podcast. My name is Stan Norman. I have the privilege of serving as host of this ministry. And today we are joined by Blake and Kristen Gray. And so we're going to have a very special podcast today. It's going to be one in which they are going to share their life story and the things the Lord has taught them about relationships, marriage, and family. Before we get into that, though, first of all, welcome. Glad to have you here today. And briefly, just tell our listeners a little bit about where you're from and your background. Obviously, you wouldn't be on this podcast if you didn't have some kind of connection to agriculture community. So, Chris, we'll start with you ladies first.
Okay. Well, my background was not of one being in the side of producer, but my background has been with a family of almost 100 years in the John Deere farm equipment business that started with my grandfather years ago. Wow. And then passed on to my dad through that. And he and my mom have worked together in that business, which was Kirk Equipment at the time. And so my dad was Tom Kirk and my mom, Teresa Kirk. And then a few years ago, we formed with some other companies around and made a merger. And now we are Legacy Equipment in Northeast Arkansas. So, and I
that explains
there.
The green, the John Deere green.
That explains the John Deere green. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's been my background my whole life.
Okay. So ag farm equipment.
There you go. Yes.
And Blake, what about you?
Well, I started out with a young age, falling in love with production agriculture on my uncle's farm. And just not too far from here in Light. I helped him all the way up through college and pursued a degree in plant science with a minor in ag business from Arkansas State University. Leaving there, I worked in precision technologies and fertilized sales. And currently, I work for a farm management company. What we do is we purchase large farms, and I manage those, put producers on them. I'm currently also farming for myself. This will be my third crop after leaving my family and striking out on my own.
Okay.
So that's kind of my story.
You went rogue on the family.
I did. I had a chance to pick up a large piece of ground and went out and actually purchased all the equipment needed and started out farming.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we say on this podcast is that it's okay to not be okay. We just don't want you to stay that way. And the reason that you guys are here today is that a mutual friend said, you guys have an incredible story, a story of ongoing grace and mercy and redemption. And we want those that listen to us to draw inspiration and encouragement, and maybe the Lord can use your testimonies to instill hope in some families that may be struggling. So by way of just kind of reading a little bit for background, like a lot, if not all, farms, families, you guys have endured some serious stress on your life. Blake and Kristen have lived through some very dark times in their lives and experienced profound pain through broken families. Over the past year, they have found a light that pierces through that darkness and is making all the difference in their lives. They found when they started attending church and found a group of farmers who face many of the same struggles as they do. As Blake mentioned, he's a row crop farmer in Northeast Arkansas. Kristen's worked 25 years in the farm implement business. So today, I want to thank you on the front end. I may be thanking you throughout this podcast. And when we get to the end, I'm going to thank you even more for your vulnerability and willingness to be transparent. So let's start with you, Kristen.
Okay.
Let's start with the loss of your father and the emotional impact, the emotional blow that had on your life. Tell us, when did that happen and how did that impact you and your family?
Yes, to really, I guess, talk about the profoundness that had for my family, I do have to say again how my parents had worked together forever, and that's exactly how my mom, Teresa, and my dad, Tom, met, was that my grandfather hired my mother when she was going to college at ASU, and they'd been together their entire lives. So their entire lives were built together, and that's how I grew up. I thought that's how families were just supposed to be. They got up in the morning, they had breakfast together, they talked and had coffee together, they went to work together, they had lunch together, they came home, and we still talked all about that, and my dad never missed anything, and he was just that man to me that I know is the way fathers are to daughters, but he was just a larger-than-life person. He was just the one that could just fix everything. Like, he was the boss. He was, you know, dad's going to take care of it. Like, when the worst thing ever happened, whenever that boyfriend broke up with me, well, daddy, you know, how are you going to help me? And he would always, always, always just seem like he had the answer. And we would, I'm a big Disney fan, and he instilled that in me from a very young age. And that's relevant that I have to say that, because that's a major part of my life, because I will never forget the first time when I was at Walt Disney World when I was 8 years old. It was on my 8th birthday, and I was looking at Cinderella's castle, and I said, Dad, if Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was Walt Disney's first animated movie, then why is this Cinderella's castle? And he said, well, the reason is, Kristen, is because no matter how bad things got to Cinderella in her life, and no matter what happened to her, she never lost hope, she never lost faith, and she believed that her dreams would come true. And that is the life that I want for you. Mm. And that started, you know, my walk with the Lord, actually, and searching for that and how he wanted for me in my life. And he had this thing he would always say, whenever things would be bad, he'd say, believe, believe, Kristen, you got to believe, you got to believe. And he'd say it to everybody. Anybody that knew him, they'd say, oh, Tom, Mr. Tom. Well, he said, you got to believe, it's going to be okay. And he just never, you know, nothing was ever, he never panicked, and he never talked about his faith a whole lot openly, but he lived it. He was a walking example of kindness and good, and you just knew
he was a remarkable man.
He was to me. I know he wasn't perfect, and but he was to me, and he struggled. He got, you know, sick of, you know, this. I've been living in a season of my life for the past 10 years, a little bit more, that I honestly never thought I would find myself in, and it was a lot done to me and a lot that I did to myself. And so I was in the part of this season where I was, thought I was at rock bottom, when we found out that my dad's cancer had come back, and he didn't have long to live. And after that, he lived about 3 months. And the night he passed away, November 24th, 2019, we had the opportunity to visit the night that he died before. And I wrote down, and I have this written, I've kept it in my safe for all these years, some things that he told me. And when somebody tells you something that's probably the last time they know they're ever going to speak to you, you kind of want to hold on to that.
Yeah.
And he said to me that I was strong. I was always just the most incredibly strong person. And there had been some things that had happened to me that he said a weaker person would have died, frankly, physically and mentally. And he said, you know, take care of your mother. And he went on to give me a couple of other instructions. But the very last thing he said was you've lost your belief. You have to promise me that you will believe again. And of course I said, well, I will, Daddy. And then when he died, of course, you know, that was just devastating. And at the time I was living with them, I was living with my mother. So here we were, and now she's the owner of a business.
So interject, had you been married, or were you married? Or?
Well, that was the beginning of the very dark season of my life. Yes, I had been married.
Okay.
To a very large farmer, and which started some of my, I don't know quite the word, Oh, I wasn't just thrilled with the idea of being married to a farmer anymore because of the struggles there. But the main thing that I struggled with during that was trying to have a child. And there was no reason. I was healthy, but I found myself losing. We lost two children, and the second one was at 20 weeks to a genetic abnormality that was so rare nobody had even heard of it in Northeast Arkansas. And it was a genetic abnormality that happened when, you know, it comes like an actual cancer. So my baby, my son was killing me, and the child wasn't going to live anyway. So I had to make that hard decision. And I never truly recovered from that. And then my ex-husband really, really said he wanted a child. And I was older in age. I was 34, 35. And I was just terrified. I can't do this again. It just crippled me. And in the midst of all that, if anybody's ever struggled with infertility or anything like that, people like to give you a whole lot of medicine for that. Hormones, all these things that just make you, you know, crazier than you already feel like you're being. And so there was all that, and trying to have a baby, trying to have a child, you know, and all these things.
How long had y'all been married when this was going on?
Well, when it started, we'd been married about, 4 years. The first we started trying to have a child. And when the second one happened, our son, it was about 6 years into that. Okay. And so at the extreme advisement of all medical professionals, started trying to have another child. And I was just terrified during the whole time. I know it was just hard to imagine because people would say, oh, well, it's okay. You just try again. You know, it's no big deal. And you think, yeah, it's huge. It's a huge deal. And I said, I can't go through this again. I can't go through the loss of another. I cannot do this. And yeah. I had no reason to think that there was ever going to be a different outcome the third time. But luckily, was blessed with a beautiful daughter that I had in 2017, and her name is Kirkley. And the story about that is, you know, I found out I was pregnant and had not been walking with the Lord at this point in my life because, frankly, I was really down and I was angry, and it's really easy to walk away when you're upset about something. And then through this pregnancy, all was okay until things just all one day weren't okay. And I started getting sick again, and just all these crazy things happened to me. And at this time, my marriage was deteriorating rapidly.
And how long have you been married at this point?
At this point, 6 years.
Okay.
6 years, because of just all the emotional struggles that we've been going through. And
you're in your mid-30s.
Yes, I'm, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm 36 at this point in time. I'm 36, wow. Yes. And all these things. And I frankly had a lot of resentment because I felt like, well, I'm going through all this and, you know, I might just die again to do this. And, you know, nobody seems like they care, you know, too much about it because we're trying to get this child here. And my marriage was deteriorating. My ex-husband was never there. My mom had to move in with me because I was on complete bed rest, spent a lot of time in the hospital. And at 32 weeks, I had our daughter, Kirkley, naturally almost did not make it to the hospital. It'd been the third time I'd been there that day. And they'd kept sending me home, and I almost didn't make it back. Barely never got in a room, didn't have a doctor, just had her. And there she was, and she was 32 weeks at that point. And so we, after a month stay in Le Bonheur, came home with her. And on that day that we came home, I found myself as a single mother because he left that night.
And your father's diagnosis, when was that?
And my father's diagnosis happened. Well, my dad had been diagnosed with prostate cancer, in about 2010, but it was early and we thought that they caught it. And yeah. then during this time, well, he actually then had a battle with lymphoma, which he made it through. And then the prostate cancer had come back, and we actually knew it was kind of coming back around the time when I was getting really sick with Kirkley, but nobody wanted to talk to me too much about that, obviously. So when my mom moved in with me, she did that knowing that my dad was sick. So the sacrifice that she made to do that, the sacrifice they made, took her away, which I can't even imagine how hard that was on her. I know how hard that was on her.
So just kind of summarize, you've lost two children. You had another one.
Yes.
Prematurely.
Yes.
You've had these marital problems that were going on. And when you came home after a protracted hospital stay, your ex-husband left you, and then your father is battling cancer in all this.
Yes, that's okay. correct.
That's a lot. Yeah.
And so at that point.
So how long was it from the time you got home from the hospital to the time your father passed away?
Well, we actually had a couple years with him.
Okay.
And so that was good. We had a lot of hope. And during that time, I was just a wreck. I'm just going to say I was an absolute disaster. I was emotionally a mess, mentally. There had been a lot of mental, emotional, physical trauma there that was just unreal, that I just frankly couldn't cope with.
And spiritual too.
And spiritual, very much.
Yeah.
And I was just, I many a times I thought I was going crazy, and I'm sure other people thought I was going crazy too. And people, doctors, everybody tried to give me a lot of medicine to calm me down. You know, all these things that people do to try to calm you down. And that's when you get in really bad habits, right? When you're trying to cope with something that you can't cope with. And so at that point in time, I moved in with my parents, and it was a wonderful place. My parents remodeled their basement for Kirkley and me, and we got to live there. And so the night he died, we were all there. He died at home, and we got to be there talking to him.
I want to lean into this a little bit. So you've walked down a hard path, maybe using the psalmist David's, the valley, the shadow of death, and
yes.
then your hero dies.
Yes.
So with all of those other life experiences that happened to you, and then that, where were you? What was happening? How did you go there?
How did I cope with that?
What kind of impact did all that have?
Oh my gosh. Well, it just devastating. I didn't want to talk about my faith. I didn't want to talk about the Lord. I just wanted happiness in whichever way I could get it. And so I did a lot of, you know, horrible things. You know, I drank too much. I did all these things, like the anti-anxiety medicines, you know, just out to get any attention I could from any man, frankly, because I had been abandoned, and I was searching for something that I couldn't find. And then my mom I was trying to be there to help her, but I couldn't be, because there she was, she's struggling with the loss of her husband, her also, you know, her person in this world. And then she has a whole business that now she's trying to take care of. And here I am just frankly falling all to pieces. And it just was terrible. And wow. And I'm not ashamed. I mean, I feel like I need to say to people that I know I didn't cope with this well. It wrecked my world. I mean, I honestly, there were times where I didn't even want to wake up, and I had this beautiful daughter that was healthy and so much, and I loved her so much, and I could not be there for her. Mm-hmm. I could not do that because I was in such a bad place. And
you're a single mom.
Yes.
Lost your dad, lost two babies, failed marriage, life is off the rails.
Yes.
Okay, I want to hit pause there, let the drama build, because there's somebody else at the table too. So Blake, let's talk about your life story. Tell us a little bit about growing up. You grew up in church, not in church, or tell us a little bit about your pilgrimage and where life found you.
So let's just, I'll kind of start at the beginning there. We grew up, you know, going to church. My dad was an over-the-road truck driver growing up after he quit farming. So we only got to see him a little bit on Friday and Saturday and Sunday. So there's a lot of times, you know, we would choose to see dad instead of going to church, I felt like. My parents, my dad's side of the family was 100% Baptist, going back to his great-grandpa being a preacher in a small country church. Yeah. My mom's side is 100% Methodist, so it was always a split. So we, you know, we kind of went both ways. It depends on which grandma's house I was at, where I was at church at. And my mom attended the Methodist church in town, and we went there to a young age. You know, I would say later on in life, I guess I was in about fourth grade, I lost a brother to suicide. And that kind of rocked our entire family. I think that really brought kind of a reckoning to everybody that church, you know, God, why? You know, why did you do this to us? And we just really quit going. After that, the only time we really attended church is if I was, you know, I spent the night with my grandma on Saturday night. You know, I went on Sunday. I didn't love to go. But at the same time, I was coping with it myself, trying to figure out, why did this all happen to us? What made that happen? You know, and you just kind of get lost in all that growing up. Kind of fast forward through that, you know, as I got older, I guess you would say I turned my coping there was not church. It was, you know, Saturday nights out drinking, doing things that I should not have been doing at a young age, and kind of progressed through that. I was, I guess, more out to have a good time, unfortunately, through that. Rock on into college, and that escalated a lot to, you know, drug usage with, you know, alcohol usage. I was in a fraternity, and that was just, you know, kind of the thing that made me numb to everything that had happened to me in my life. You kind of just want to block everything out, and when you're in that moment, that's the best feeling in the world, but eventually you have to sober up, and it's the sober reality is always there. You didn't fix anything. I wound up having a child in college. He's Bryson. He's 18 now, just graduated.
You don't look old enough to have an 18-year-old. I'm telling you right now. You look like you're 18 to me.
That's how I feel it some days. Yeah. So he's in his second semester of college, starting after the first year. I'm so proud of him. Me and his mother were just not in a good place. We got along great, just we're not meant to be together. So we co-parented, you know, him through his life. That was hard watching him having to go back and forth a lot. And knowing that our decisions had caused that, but we tried to make the best out of that.
So we're talking about 18, 19 years ago now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll just kind of be honest. My high school years into college are kind of a blur. I mean, yeah. I didn't want to feel all that. I was, you know, not really a good person, you would say. I did a lot of bad things. And, you know, I worked on the farm during the day, and I felt like I partied all night. And, you know, my mother and father are two of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And I oftentimes wonder, I'm like, how in the world did they wind up with me? You know, I was kind of a little hellion, honestly. Hmm. And they did the best they could with me, and then, you know, tried to guide me, but they were coping in their own way too. Our child, you know, I guess I should say our family life after we lost my brother was just, it was never the same. I'm super close with my parents, but, you know, they didn't really deal with that loss to an extent. My dad worked all the time. My mom kind of involved herself very heavily in work and education. There were some days I was just kind of hung out there, you know, to make the best of it. It's where that is and comes to the decisions I made. Later on, I met my first wife in college, actually, at the fraternity house. We were together for quite a while and got married. And we have one child, Miles. He's 10 now. And a lot of what happened for our divorce was, you know, we were young. I had not settled down still. I was still living that wild bachelor phase of my life, unfortunately, while she was home tending to a child. And it was not fair to her what I was doing. And, you know, I look back now, and I was very resentful when she left. But the older I get and the more I kind of indulge myself in church and things like that, and I see why she left.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard reality because at the moment you want to blame them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not always them. Sometimes you have to take a look in the mirror, and a lot of times you don't want to see what's there. And I didn't when she left, I had two boys, you know, part of the time at my house. And when they weren't there, I spiraled out of control pretty much. If there was a bar room, I was pretty much in it, I felt like, most nights. It wasn't glamorous. I still got up the next day and functioned.
Farming?
And so I'm not farming at this point.
Okay.
At this point, sir, I am. I worked for an investment farmland company, and I'm traveling. I'm managing properties in about five states. So at this point, I'm staying a lot in Oklahoma and Texas. I had a house down there.
Okay.
So I just kind of went back and forth at that point, trying to figure out what is going on in my life. And still haven't quite hit rock bottom, I felt like. You know, I felt like I was the good time Charlie. And unfortunately, it was so strange. My closest friends group growing up, we all, I would say within a year and a half, get divorced. So we turn into like this bachelor group that's larger than life, we felt like, which we weren't. We were probably an embarrassment to ourselves. And that was our way to cope because all of our stories were very similar. None of us wanted to admit that there's a possibility part to blame was ours. So we went hard for a lot of years there, it felt like, I guess almost four. And I guess I kind of alluded, when I was married, my wife's family was Catholic.
Okay.
And it sounds awful, but what I figured out, the Catholic Church, it was totally acceptable to drink. So you didn't get shunned on it, you know? So it was, it didn't help me in my situation, I guess I should say.
So how old are you at this time?
So when she leaves me, I'm in my late 20s,
okay,
you know.
Still a young guy.
Still a young guy. Still a lot of opportunity left out there in the world. She had found someone else, and they married very soon after. He's a great guy. I should say this. Me and her get along great. I can honestly say we are such better friends than we were husband and wife, and it's great. We co-parent just the best for miles. And to me, that's the most important thing, because the sad part of all this, and I think what hurt me the most, was letting the kids down. They were suffering for choices I made that they did not have to.
Right.
And that's in the past year, that's really hit me hard. That, you know, in all reality, I'm the cause of what happened to all of our family. I mean, granted, if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't have met my wonderful wife. I mean, I can't say enough about her in this. So, you know, went to church. Unfortunately, in the words of Blake Ligon, I was a seat holder. I didn't participate. You know, I was just there. Hey, everybody saw you there. You checked the boxes. Grandma was happy. Everybody else is happy. You know, you go on. Let's go eat lunch now. And never fully dove in to what I needed to be doing there.
Hmm. Wow. Okay, to summarize, you lost a brother.
Yes, sir.
Had a devastating impact upon you and your family.
It did.
And then the way you chose to cope was through substance abuse and a lot of hell in life going on, high school, into college. Have two sons, and been married. And then not. And then, is there anything in between this that we need to bring up before we start talking about when you guys started coming together?
Oh, I was just going to say when I wasn't in his larger than life bachelor group, but that was.
I'm not sure you wanted to be.
No, nobody really.
But it was at that same time that I was going through all my stuff too. So we had some, you know, and his best friend who actually is the reason we met, like, was in that group and we worked together and everything. And boy, he'd have some stories with me. So I knew all about this that was going on with all these guys, but I never had met any of them before. You know, that was all I was thinking. And at this point in time, my dad had just...
So you knew of each other, but you didn't know each other.
No, we didn't know each other. And it's, what's crazy is we kind of have two parallel train wrecks going at the same time. I mean, it's
That's exactly because at this point, I mean,
both have experienced loss of somebody in your family.
Yeah.
And you both have a marriage that didn't work.
I was thinking. Single. Oh, sorry.
You're single parenting. You're kind of single parenting.
I'm co-parenting. It's a lot.
You got two?
Yes.
Okay.
Two.
And you got the one?
Yes.
Okay.
I was just thinking when he mentioned that before my dad even died, and I mean, maybe a month after my divorce was final, after all my struggle with having a child, of course, I have a daughter, and it occurred to me that, well, my ex-husband just really, 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 really wanted that son. And I often joked about it. And it really wasn't, I say it's a joke, but I wasn't joking. I said, I would not feel more pressure if I were Anne Boleyn trying to give Henry VIII an heir to the throne.
Wow.
And he beheaded her. I would not have felt so. You know, our marriage really, really, really started going down like there was nothing to fight for. I felt like Gwen Kirkley was a girl, and because we had to have that male, that farmer, that you know, that person to carry on this. And it was maybe a month after our divorce was final that I found out that who he had been with during that was pregnant with a boy. And then my dad was still alive at that time.
This is your ex-husband.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. My ex-husband, I mean, of course they found each other,
okay, during,
you know, all that, and had to come to that realization as well. And when you're in the middle of something, you can't see things that are as clear as afterwards. And you think, golly, why couldn't I see that? And I'm not going to say that I was by any means perfect at all. I mean, like, I see a whole lot of things now, but I was just going to say, when I found that out, and then it was just a couple months later, my dad died, that started really my train wreck. Like, what that, you know, all the drinking, and you know, it wasn't illegal drugs, abuse, but I'd take clonazepam, just anything, because I'd wake up in the middle of the night just panicking and screaming and rocking back and forth. I'd have to go get my mom up and say, I can't take care of her. And I would just be having full-blown anxiety attacks that I could not get under control. And it was just hard. So then what do? You know, I mean, you go get something else to drink, or you take another pill, and then you just sit there and you, like, as Blake said, you... The reality is when you sober up, the problem is still there.
Yeah.
You can't escape it, you know. And my friends were all watching me go through this. So I was, my relationship with a farmer was that I thought that's how all farmers were going to be, you know.
Okay, so let me kind of summarize before we get into the next phase of this. So you're both... Okay, I'm going to use your term, okay?
Okay.
Have your permission. Your lives are train wrecks.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You've had failed marriage. You are both involved in trying to find a way to medicate the pain and make it stop hurting, and it's not working. You're obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, you're not active in church. You're not walking with the Lord. You're still working somewhat in the family business, and
yes,
you're still doing the farm act thing.
Yep, yep.
And you're still with the bromance guy group.
Yeah.
Doing whatever, the perpetual fraternity that will not end.
That's a good way to put it there.
And you're both, I can't even imagine. I don't have a word to describe. And I don't want to do where you both were injustice by somehow trying to describe.
I don't think we can either.
The reality of the dark, hurting, damaged place you're in.
Yeah.
It was like in this deep, dark hole of blackness. Like, I just felt like that nothing could get me out of it.
And
just,
somehow you guys met each other.
Well, that was from that mutual friend.
Okay, a mutual friend introduced you to another farmer.
Well, that's an interesting story too. You mind if I expand on?
No,
well,
go ahead.
I mean,
you're fine.
Because I have to tell the funny. So Daniel and I have.
Because I figured you'd write off all farmers from then on out. You're going to look for a school teacher or banker.
Yeah, I was looking for something totally. But the irony of it was that my dad died on November the 24th of 2019. And the first time I ever laid eyes on Blake was January the 2nd of 2020. And our mutual friend, Daniel Vaughn, my mom and I needed some TVs moved, and because we couldn't lift them. So he goes and gets Blake out of bed, and here Blake comes out to the house, and I say wearing a hoodie and a hangover. You know, we were
no
all...
No doubt. I had shut the bar down the night before very, very hard, and my best friend Daniel calls, and he's like, "Hey, I've got to have your help today." And I was like, "I don't know that I'm in any shape to help anybody today." And
Because you're coming off New Year's Eve.
I'm coming off New Year's Eve. Yeah. It was.
Actually, it was New Year's Day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Why
stop? Let's go from New Year's Eve to New Year's Day.
It had not stopped, unfortunately. And so anyway, next thing I know, he's in my driveway. And he's like, "Well, you don't have a choice now. Come on." And I get myself together and we drive over.
And come out, and here we are. And I'm not in any better shape. I'll just be frank. I wasn't out doing anything. I was just staying home, but I wasn't in any better shape. And probably been up till 3 or 4, you know, drinking, whatever, watching TV. And so then I see him, and Daniel had always talked about for 20 years his best friend Blake. And I had this picture in my mind of not this.
Not what got out of the truck.
because they're just kind of polar opposites of each other to be best friends. I just had this picture in my mind, and I met him, you know, just 1 month after my dad died. And so he met me in my train wreck state, like probably the worst I've ever been in my life when he met me that day. And yet I guess he still wanted to ask me out, so he did.
The farmer.
Oh yeah. And then by the farmer,
you went out with the farmer.
The point was I went out with him because he was just helping his family farm. And in his words on our first date, the job I have, which funds my farming habit, is, you know, and he describes to me. And then there was a time there he even said, "I don't care if I farm. I'll give it up for you."
So how long did y'all date?
I don't know, because then you broke up with me when I lost my mind.
I had to leave for a while. I took a slight disappearance.
Yeah, which then threw me in this
back in the spiral.
Mole, yeah, like major, because everything, it wasn't him, but it threw me back to like it took me a long time, and I'm not ashamed to, you know, admit that I've had to get help from professional therapists and all that kind of stuff. And I had not gotten to the point where I had gotten this help yet. But everything that he would do, it was not like, it was so strange. It was like I knew it was him, but I couldn't see it was him. I was seeing the other situation, and my body was physically reacting to the other situation. It was like I couldn't distinguish between the two. It was crazy.
So from the time you first met to the time you got married, are we talking 6 months? Are we talking a year? Are we talking a couple of years? How long are we talking?
When did we get married? 2 years ago.
You might want to nail that down.
We're fixing to celebrate.
You might want to nail that date down.
I was just thinking it was January of 2020, and we got married December 31st, 2021.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then you're still train wrecking when you get married, right?
Yes.
Okay.
He never knew me not a train wreck.
I just made that up. That's a new word. Train wrecking.
That could be our.
Okay.
Our
so coin. Then you're train wrecking, and how is are the trains wrecking going to come together? Somewhere in here, there was a turn.
Yes. Yep. There was. So what happened was he always wanted to farm on his own, and he had assured me that our farmers weren't gone all the time. You know, farmers were present. Because I frankly felt like that I was worth less than any piece of dirt. I just felt like the lowest of low. And I was so, had this thought that no matter what was going on with me, it literally, if I was dying, I was still not as important as that farm, because that had been
Which is not how your father made you feel.
Not at all. I mean, my dad, I grew up in church. We grew up First United Methodist Church. I was saved when I was 8 years old. I am a person that has known the Lord my whole life that has fallen away from this.
So had you made a profession of faith of any kind up to this point?
No. I mean, I would probably say I danced as far away from having to declare that as possible. Okay. But there's no good reason why.
But God was really not in this discussion when you guys got married. Dating?
No.
Okay. It wasn't.
I have to talk about my brother David who gave me away and at our wedding. And I remember, he said, if you always keep the Lord at the center of your life, then you'll be able to, overcome the struggles and all these things.
Did you want to hear that?
Yes. Okay. It wasn't because the God was always at the center.
So you were still open to this.
Oh, absolutely.
But you were running.
I'm that one that's got this cynical thought process always, as she would tell me. And I'm like, no, I don't need this. Hey, I've made it this far on my own. I don't need anybody's help. I don't need the Lord's help. I can do this. And we've not hit rock bottom yet.
No, we haven't.
We're
not there.
Hey, listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to That Farm Life. You've been listening to the first part of our conversation with Blake and Kristen Gray. To hear the second part, please tune in next week. You've been listening to That Farm Life, Planting Hope, Harvesting Strength, with your host, Stan Norman. That Farm Life is a creation of AgriHealth Network and is produced by Eagle Farms at Williams Baptist University. AgriHealth Network exists to offer opportunities to help you deal with the stress and strains of farm life through faith, family, and community with other farmers. You can learn more about AgriHealth Network at agrihealth.net and more about Williams at williamsbu.edu. That Farm Life is produced and edited by Mike Dixon. Chris Grady and Brett Cooper serve as executive producers, and Elizabeth Ring is our production assistant. Thanks for listening, and as always, keep farming and keep the faith.